Good morning. This morning I'm talking about Agni Yoga and the teaching. The teachings of Agni Yoga were given to Helena Rourke by a member of the planetary hierarchy. As you read the books from the Agni Yoga series, you're going to learn about the level of a master's mind, Master Maurya, who had a universal mind, who has a universal mind. So in today's talk, I'm going to be talking about three themes that we read in the Agni Yoga teachings. I'll be talking about the disciple, the earthly teacher, and the words of Master M. In order to understand the words of the master, the student must expand their consciousness by reflecting on and contemplating the ideas of the teachings, what they're reading. Contemplation means to concentrate and to scientifically think about each idea that is given. This is why when you pick up the books of Agni Yoga and you wonder if they're over 100 years old now, why are there only so few of these books, 13, 14 of these books? Because you don't read through them the way you read a novel. You take each idea, which is found in maybe one sentence out of a whole paragraph, and you begin to contemplate on that idea and then to think scientifically about it. This kind of thinking then helps the student to digest the light of the teaching in such a way that the student can properly assimilate the teaching as food for their bodies. So when you are reading just one word from the teaching, think that this one word was given by Master Maurya, who has a universal mind. You might say, well, what is a universal mind? Well, read the words of Master M, and you will learn what it means to have a universal mind. So the student, no matter their level of consciousness, must meditate and think about MM's great ideas in order to really digest them. So you may boast, and I hear people, I know at least a dozen people that have told me they have read all of the books of the Agni Yoga series. And then they put them down and they went on to something else. I cannot even imagine being able to sit down and just in a day's time read through one of those books. You can't if you are thinking, contemplating, and scientifically trying to understand the idea behind these words of Master M, who has a universal mind. You cannot climb the mountain without letting go of the many earthly burdens which hinder the advancement of your soul. As your soul unfolds and its light increases, you will gradually begin to realize that you cannot wear your old garments to the mountaintop. You must leave these old garments behind one by one because they are no longer needed. As the student's light increases and their soul advances through conscious striving, they find that they are becoming a mountain themselves. So we can see just by these few words out of these three or four paragraphs that being a student of Agni Yoga is to be a student of action. You're not, in other words, finding a way to go to the Himalayan mountains and a cave in the mountains and sit there. That's not the kind of action. Not in today's world. Not according to Master M, that we must work on ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally, and leave these old garments behind at some point so that we can become a mountain. We can truly become symbolically a mountain. The inner esoteric meaning of a mountain relates it to being close to infinity. Mountains are signs of initiation. One who climbs mountains of striving and self-denial is the one who is on the path of initiation. So let me share a note that was written by George, about George, the youngest son of the Roriks, and it was written by his older brother, Svetislav. Svetislav said about his brother, "George is the archetype of a truly inspired scientist and thinker, a man evincing supreme spiritual harmony. He recognized that the highest achievement of man is individual self-perfection. Only by constantly working on himself and developing the qualities inherent in a person striving for a more perfect life, could he comprehensively enrich his chosen path and raise above the level of everyday life." So just those last few words, to raise himself above everyday life, that's a significant image for us to hold in our mind as we strive toward the mountaintop, to rise above the level of everyday life. So this is a living example of an Agni Yogi. Helena Rourke wrote to one of her students saying, "First of all, the teaching requires independence of action for the disciple. The teaching gives direction, generously giving the precious hints, but the disciple must themselves, with their own hands and feet, build their path. Therefore, do not expect ready-made formula. From small hints, build the great structure." Unquote. Once a student has constructed the Bridge of Beauty, also known as the Radiant Bridge, and thus building continuity of consciousness, they are able to think through the light of the intuitional plane and perceive the precious hints given to them by the masters. Though in most cases, the masters are not going to tell them where and when and what to do or even where to go. They just give hints. For example, if the disciple of today is in contact with the master will impress them with hints. Hints such as maybe changing their present location where they live. But he will not necessarily tell them where to move. This must be figured out according to the disciple's heart and consciousness. Now, the disciple already knows their part to play in the plan and where. So it is then their responsibility to know how to manifest their particular life's work and develop the needed skills and talents and abilities to present it in an appropriate form. This is what it means when the master says, "With thy own hands and feet, build your path." Each disciple must make their own effort and manifest their dreams and vision with their own hands and feet. The teaching gives the direction, but it is up to the disciple to carve the path. So here's another example. The disciple feels a strong compulsion to create a study group. They must decide how to create the group, to consider the right time, the right location, and so forth. They must also be prepared to facilitate or to teach the study group. If they have the desire but not yet the readiness, they must then go about finding what qualities are they missing, what skills are needed, and so forth, to prepare themselves. See, it takes work, it takes dedication, it takes a sensitivity to the need, and then the humility to recognize if you have the skill set, let's say, to meet that need. And this is what I sadly find, more frequent than not, what is lacking. It's like the person has the desire to create this or to create that, to create some kind of a gathering, to enjoy being together with one another and to share ideas with one another. But then things fall apart. They dissipate. You have a meeting, maybe two meetings, and then the third and fourth and fifth meeting never transpires because nobody shows up. So when we all have a purpose in life, and that purpose is called Dharma. Within our Dharma, we find our purpose in life. A desire to bring people together may not be your Dharma. Your Dharma may be to support that person who is creating the study group. And that study group may grow into a complete and whole organization. So not everyone is in a position because of their life purpose, because of their Dharma, to launch something that they hope will grow into an organization or a movement. So that's why that person with the desire eventually becomes defeated, experiences self-defeat, because they had the desire, but they didn't have the readiness, and it was not part of their Dharma to engage in. So by his own hands and feet means the disciple's own labor. You can't depend on somebody else. It's like, I know people who have, again, they're great idea makers, and they will create the idea and then give the idea to maybe their good friends and say, help me now, do this. And then they leave. They walk away. And they don't understand, after even 40 years of trying to put together these ideas into some kind of form, that the forms are like quicksand. They just sink to the bottom. Nothing happens. It's so interesting. They're not willing to build with their own hands and feet and to labor and to dedicate and to sacrifice their day-to-day wishes to manifest that idea or those ideas. It's so interesting. Do not depend on someone else to choose the teaching, chew the teaching for you. We must digest the teaching just like we must digest these ideas and cogitate or contemplate and meditate on the idea and then try to see clearly. Now you should be thinking clearly, with clear mind. Okay, now what do I do? Do I have the skill set I need to build this idea and put it into form? Now, H.R. Helena Roark said in her letter, "From small hints, build the great structure." Today's teacher does not tell it all, does not give it all, nor does the teacher cause dependency on the wisdom and knowledge and experience that they have gained, but instead guides the student through their suggestions, through their hints. This is the present method of teaching, a new age teaching. I remember, this is so funny, it's not particularly educational, but it was an experience where I was walking along with a student and they were very unhappy because things did not go according to their plan. And I said, well, why not? I said, I gave you some ideas, some suggestions, some hints, you know, to go forward. Yeah, but it was just a hint. And I knew I didn't have to follow up on a hint or a suggestion. And it's always stayed with me. It's so funny because perhaps a person was used to people speaking to them authoritatively. See, but that's not the way the teacher, that's not the way the master gives us anything these days. It's only through an idea, only through a hint, sometimes an outline, sometimes an image, and then the rest is up to us to interpret, translate, and put it into form. The Piscean Age teaching was to bind the student to the guru in order to build the student's devotional consciousness, their sense of identity, and resulting self-confidence, little s, self-confidence. The Aquarian Age energy is to help the student to build group consciousness. To build group consciousness requires the student to be in conscious contact with their higher self. The student must go through their own efforts, engage in their own efforts and strivings and so forth. They can't depend on the teacher to do it for them. The role of the teacher is to help the student break through their crystallizations, break through their habits, their glamours and illusions in order to release them to the light of the higher mind and eventually to their master. In the book New Era Community, paragraph 129, it says, "Therefore, ring the bell only at the right time. Thus, you will avoid coercion." MM is telling us, ring the bell only at the right time, is saying we cannot force the teaching on anyone. If we try to force the teaching, we will prematurely open a person's nature in such a way that they will crack. They will lose their mental and emotional balance. And we see this happen. An overzealous student will, in their excitement, try to force the teaching upon their family members, upon their friends who are not yet ready for this fiery energy. The teacher will first create the right conditions, and then the student will grow. For example, you would not try to force atomic physics upon your 7-year-old child, wishing him to be a scientist when he grows up. You wouldn't start him with the most complex, but create the right conditions in that child's life to discover if the child has an interest in physics. In this way, you're giving your child an opportunity to prepare for learning advanced sciences if that is part of his or her dharma. We learned over the years, watching many people come and go in the teachings, that people will have resistance and perhaps even negative reactions to whatever they don't understand. So you must start at the beginning, ring the bell at the right time. It takes time to prepare the right conditions for something to grow. So it is important to take time first to try to assimilate the teaching, and then you will see that you are growing. So it is important never to force people to study the teaching, but rather radiate the teaching to others through your own example of life. We are also told the teaching must not be sold in the bazaars. The teaching is only for those who search for it. It is for those who are purifying their natures and striving toward the cosmos. It is for those who are striving for beauty and independence. This practice will keep the teaching from degenerating. So in today's multimedia world, we have to be very careful because everything is out there now. As stewards of the teaching, we must be cautious what we are putting out there. So we put what, it's like we're ringing the bell on the initial teaching, letting that teaching out on, like we have a Facebook page called Agni Yoga Living Ethics Community. And we basically just post quotes. We just recently published a book called an Agni Yoga Anthology, which talks about Agni Yoga through the founders and the original members of Agni Yoga. So this is an introduction to people to better understand Agni Yoga. We've published an Agni Yoga companion, which gives various paragraphs about certain themes of the teaching. So we're introducing themes of Agni Yoga in such a way and helping people learn about the founders of Agni Yoga in such a way that they're going to say, I want to learn more about Agni Yoga. I want to read the pages of the books of Agni Yoga and to become an Agni Yoga practitioner. So we have to be discriminatory about what we put out there in the bazaar. What, that's an old word, you know, that we find in the teaching of Agni Yoga, the word bazaar. So the bazaar today is the internet. So we have to be careful what we produce on the internet. If you present the teaching to people who are not ready for it, they will change it to suit their own personality, weaknesses, or interests. And we see this happening today. We see it happening in Agni Yoga. Where my focus is. And so we use this discriminatory process when some people ask to subscribe to that Facebook page, we will deny their application. The way Facebook is now, all the rules are changing and they'll let almost anybody in, but we can still deny posting. And there's this one person, he just tries all the time to get his belief in the teachings posted through YouTube videos. And it's all about himself. And it's old age. What he knows about Agni Yoga is so superficial, but superficially wrong. See, so we still have to be stewards at that door the best we can, you know, to prevent people from changing the teaching to suit their personality. So I said earlier, one who climbs the mountain of striving and self-denial is the one who is on the path of initiation. One day, a young man wanted to become a monk and renounce the world. He went to the door of the monastery and said that he wanted to become a monk. The doorkeeper asked him, "Did you cut your ties with the world?" And the boy said, "Yes." But another teacher who was standing by the doorkeeper asked, "Well, what is that string around your neck?" "Oh, it's nothing." The teacher came and pulled the string, and he found at the other end a bag containing a lot of money. He said to the boy, "Unless you renounce this bag of money also, you cannot come to the monastery." The boy immediately threw the bag into the lake. The time comes in the life of every disciple when they have a major shock. They face a drastic decision. Do they pass or do they go back for another 10,000 years in their evolution? Does this love for the teaching motivate them? Or do their attachments to money, sexual practices, or separative interests control them? This is the turning point in every disciple's life. The teacher can give the student hints and signs and suggestions, but will then necessarily step back and observe the student's decision and actions. The earth plane teacher will be subjectively warned by the student's shock. That earthly teacher will be subjectively warned, in other words, given an alert about the shock that student is going to go through. Before the teacher can present the disciple to the student's master or to the leading light of a higher ashram, the student must make the decision. The result of their decision will mean that they will either pass or they'll lose 10,000 years. If they fail, the earth plane teacher will grieve for the student, but cannot interfere with the student's decision. If the student fails, the failure then belongs to his teacher. Once the student passes, however, the relationship between the student and teacher will take on a new and deeper dimension, becoming a close disciple. Regarding the relation between teacher and disciple, MM indicates in the paragraph found in Agni Yoga, paragraph 103, that the teacher gives indications within those limits which are permitted. He or she uplifts the disciple, cleansing them of their outworn habits. The teacher warns the student against all kinds of treason, superstition, and hypocrisy. The teacher will try the disciple openly and in secret. M.M. goes on to say, this disciple chooses his own teacher. He or she reveres them as one of the highest beings. They trust the teacher and bring them their best thoughts. They cherish the nature of the teacher and inscribe it upon the sword of their word. They show diligence in labor and flexibility in achievement. The student welcomes trials as they welcome the dawn, and their hope is directed to the unlocking of the next gate. M.M. concludes this verse by saying, friends, if you wish to approach us, choose a teacher on earth and place your guidance in his care. The teacher will tell you in time when the key may be turned in the gate. Each one should have a teacher on earth. Again, that is from paragraph 103 in the book Agni Yoga. Agni Yoga emphasizes the covenant: when the disciple is ready, the teacher will appear. Saying this covenant is understood by only a few. Almost no one realizes that this readiness must contain in itself some definite qualities and conditions. In the condition, or in the question of acceptance of a disciple, karma plays the main role. The person overburdened with karma cannot hope to become a close disciple. There are only a few who realize what a heavy burden the earthly teacher takes on by accepting a disciple. Helena Roark writes to her students, saying, you may ask what the burden of the teacher is. I assure you that it is terrible. By accepting a disciple, the teacher includes him or her in her consciousness and establishes with them an invisible but active bond. Now, moving on. There are essentially five signs of the teachings of Agni Yoga to be cognizant of. The first is discipline, then courage, then striving, then fearlessness, and finally, labor. Discipline means to labor for the unfoldment of your divinity. To discipline yourself means to prepare yourself to pass the tests of probation, the physical, emotional, and mental tests that will prepare you to become a close disciple. As you discipline yourself, you are developing spiritual maturity. Courage means to stand against the obstacles and find ways and means to annihilate them. Striving is a steady expansion of beingness, which leads to identification with the higher self. It is an effort to make breakthroughs throughout our life. We must try to break out of all the limitations which bar us from the next level of spiral, the spiral of life. We cannot give up. Fearlessness. There are 3 degrees of fearlessness. The first degree is where you identify with spirit and not with matter. An Agni Yogi is a person of total fearlessness because Agni Yoga is the yoga of life. The second degree of fearlessness is the ability to penetrate into the mysteries of cosmos without any fear of the darkness, the unknown, or the mysterious. You must be able to challenge the mysterious with the spirit of conquest. And 3, The third degree of fearlessness is the ability to make a sacrifice without any trace of fear. Ask a person to donate some money for a great cause and watch the fear. Fearlessness develops in a person when he or she gives a matter sacrificially and then engages in sacrificial service. My experience has been, it's so interesting, the person who has little will give a lot, and the person who has a lot will give little in comparison to what they have. There's always exceptions, but that's generally what I've observed. And labor. In Agni Yoga, to labor means the use of energy and matter to bring into materialization the plan of the hierarchy. The only things considered as labor, which will bear fruit in the years to come, are those things which objectify the plan somewhere in the world. To labor for the plan requires readiness and preparation. The teaching explains that disciples are of four types. Four types of disciples. Interesting to break it down that way. Some follow the indications of the teacher and ascend in proper order. Two, others behind the teacher's back follow the indications to excess and thereby often harm themselves. Three, others in the teacher's absence take occasion to prattle and thereby destroy their path. And the final one, four, or D, others behind his or her back, the teacher's back, criticize the teacher and betray the teacher. Dreadful is the destiny of these last two kinds. So let the understanding of the concept of the teacher be affirmed. Yes, Agni Yoga defines and explains the importance of having an earthly teacher. And when that teacher passes, you will then be transferred, if not before, into the subjective ashram. Oftentimes, one of the disciples of the earthly teacher will be there for you, depending on your spiritual age and your karma. Such a disciple will be in direct subjective contact with the teacher and reports periodically your actions and unfoldments or other things. There are steps that you go through as you acquire the knowledge of the teaching, and they are the steps of acquiring, this is from the teaching, the steps of acquiring knowledge are alarmed, inquiry, knocking, harking, remembering, transforming, a sword-carrying pusat, which means acquiring knowledge and power, being the lamp of the desert, the lion of the desert, and finally, the co-worker of the creative principles, the creator. So what this list is stages of your interest in seeking and finding and building your knowledge. So you start by being alarmed. That's the first stage. And then you become an inquirer. You ask question after question after question after question. Then you begin to knock. Some of those questions were answered. Now you're knocking on the various doors. Now you're listening, hearkening. Now you're listening. Now you're really paying attention. And now, because you're paying attention, you're remembering. See, these are different stages. And now you're transforming your lower nature, your personality, finally ripping away, you know, the superfluous coverings, giving freedom to the soul. And now you become a sword-carrying puissant with your acquired knowledge and power. And then you move into becoming a lamp of the desert, and from there you become a lion of the desert, and then a co-worker of the creative principle. Each degree is subdivided three times. The order must be passed gradually. The one who strives can attain swiftly, but the deserter casts himself down. The degree of lion of the desert especially permits the fulfillment of your thoughts. Therefore, you must be particularly cautious. There are traitors to the teaching. Who is a traitor? The slanderer, the one who fails to speak, the one who misappropriates, who appropriates, who is a fraud, the hypocrite, the denier, and the one desiring the downfall of the teaching. So let me close with these words from Master M. The first is from paragraph 109 in the book Agni Yoga. He says, "The heart knows its friends. Therefore, carefully examine your friends, lest you admit into your heart a casual passerby. The teacher is your closest friend. Do not add to his burden." The next paragraph is the very next paragraph, paragraph 110. "Joy is easily attained if at each moment you feel devotion to us, to the masters. Satisfaction is reached within reach of those disciples who value the clouds, realizing that without clouds, the sun would scorch. The teacher can act where his hand is not tied." So that gives you a little bit of insight about Agni Yoga this morning.